Welcome, and thanks for listening to Explore Cell Therapy, where hematology, oncology, and transplant experts examine practice-changing research and hot topics in hematopoietic stem cell transplantation and other cellular therapies. I'm your host, Sam Waters, Research and Education Lead at the National Marrow Donor Program, NMDP Be the Match. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Jeffrey Aletta and Steven Spellman of NMDP Be the Match and the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, or CIBMTR, which is a research partnership between NMDP Be the Match and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Together, we examine the current state of the science behind selecting a suitable donor for allogeneic transplant, considering how access and availability has changed over time. We discuss the latest research on HLA matching, the evolution of alternative stem cell sources, and efforts to close equity gaps and ensure a donor for all potential transplant patients. To read bios on our guests and access additional resources related to today's episode, be sure to click the link in the episode description. This is part two in a two-part discussion.
So if we can come up with or start to understand the better way to select donors to minimize that relapse risk, that would be huge. And that's getting to this donor optimization phase of the approach. So now that we have a broader choice among our donors, how do we select that best donor that's going to really give us a kind of a more of a precision medicine approach to selecting the donor to understand the better outcome based on the type of disease that they have. So in a malignant disease setting, wanting to have better disease control, but then maybe in a non-malignant setting, there's other mismatches that just aren't tolerated well. And so we'll want to avoid those in that case where you're not as concerned about the disease coming back, you're more concerned about the morbidity caused by the transplant procedure. So lots of new data to come in the future.
Yeah, it's really exciting stuff. And quite frankly, I always am kind of overwhelmed a little bit about all these permissive and non-permissive and having to go back. And so a paper like Steve's is very helpful because it reviews those concepts. But dovetailing a little bit off of what Steve was mentioning, even though we use mismatch unrelated donors and haploidentical donors, in a way I've mentioned that we've transcended the HLA barrier. But it's true to a certain degree. But because there are some non-permissive mismatching that you need to, take care of and heed in terms of the mismatch unrelated donors and other variables outside of the HLA that are equally important in terms of best patient outcomes, things like not having donor-specific antibodies against the donor, is there a gender match between donor and recipient in terms of haploidentical and offspring versus sibling. And then also, the age of the donor is very important. As a matter of fact, Steve was involved in this Brent Mogan, for example, at the Medical College of Wisconsin and Martin Myers here at the NMDP, were involved in a modeling, particularly in the match unrelated donor setting, that stratified donor characteristics and transplant recipient cohort characteristics and the top donor characteristic that really impacted patient outcomes in terms of overall survival was donor age. So donor age is really something that that we pay attention to, particularly in our registry and trying to use donors that are less than 35 years of age. And probably a little bit of a separate conversation as to why that turns out to be the case, but it just goes to show that the younger donors probably have a more vigorous hematopoietic stem cell, and whether you have telomere length and all, as well as vitality of the hematopoietic stem cell itself, but it also gets into the immunity that's conferred into the recipients based upon that donor age as well. So donor age is something that clearly has risen to the top, and something that we definitely pay attention to in addition to other variables. And for the community physicians out there, it's That's why it's really important to refer these patients early, because it is an important decision in terms of what donor to use for their patient in order to generate the potential for the best patient outcomes. And then for the transplant physicians out there, again, I wish we all had Steve Spellman in our transplant programs in terms of optimization of donors. But quite frankly, there is DOTS, which is the Donor Optimization Transplant Score, DOTS, that is a program that we have available online for transplant physicians to use, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's how do you optimize donor selection based upon all that we are reviewing here. And that's a great program to take advantage of online as well.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. So, this can get complex when we're talking about things like permissive mismatches and screening for donors that, in the case of donor-specific antibodies, being able to filter out those donors that harbor those particular alleles. And so the DOTS program that Jeff mentioned has been instrumental in kind of implementing that within the our overall match source program within the National Marrow Donor Program, Be the Match. And so things like DPB1 TCE permissiveness, that's already scored. And in cases where DP is not even available, we can, Martin Myers and his team have developed methodologies to impute that data and at least give a confidence level, a probability of matching for a permissive mismatch, which is really important because the registry has been around for over 30 years now. The methodologies that we talked about a little bit earlier have evolved greatly over time. So we have donors that have been on the registry and added it in increments across that time period. And so to be able to take our understanding of HLA haplotypes and HLA allele frequencies and impute missing data for those where we have a missing HLA-C perhaps, or a missing HLA-DP, and to be able to give a probabilistic likelihood of a match at those levels or a mismatch is really important and valuable. So a lot of that innovation that's come out and been baked into the haplogic algorithm that's used, that is really the core of our match source system, but then layering on some of these other things like a donor-specific antibody filter, being able to add in the HLA-DP-TCE, other things that we hadn't talked about yet, like the HLA-B leader, which has shown that matching for B leader, which is an invariant kind of a region of the exon 1 of class of the HLA-B allele, if you can match for that leader sequence, then having a lower risk of acute GVHD in the calcineurin inhibitor space. And now some interesting data coming out of the haploidentical transplant setting suggesting if you match for HLA-B leader status that you could have, that could lead to better survival, better disease-free survival in the haplo setting as well. So some things that can really could start to we can learn from the haploidentical setting, since this is really a bit more mature than our mismatched unrelated donor use of post-transplant psi, and could give us some guidance in the future about things that made more tolerable mismatches or even potentially favorable mismatches for better disease control, things like that. So yeah, lots of opportunities. But also, I want to give a shout out to our search strategy advice team within Be the Match. I mean, they are second to none. Amazing team led by Craig Malmberg that can help guide transplant centers with donor selection. So we have our tools that are built into Match Source, but sometimes that's not the simplest way to go and identify those donors, and working directly with that team of histocompatibility experts that's been assembled can really provide some of that guidance, especially if there's specific requirements that a transplant center is looking for in a donor. So they're free to use and readily available through Be the Match for any search that's being conducted.
No, that's a wonderful call out, Steve. And I was just thinking to myself as you were both speaking, We're talking a little bit about, misperceptions or things like that that might contribute to lack of referral on the hematology oncology side of things. But, how do transplant centers keep up with all of this as well? And it sounds like we have some great resources to help them sort of tap into the latest and greatest science. But are there places that you feel, you know, some misperceptions or things need to be overcome? Is the science sort of, is practice kind of keeping up with the pace of the evolving science from your perspective? And maybe this is a little bit more of a question for Dr. Aletta, you know, in the transplant world, or are there places that, you know, additional tips or tricks for best practice to kind of help support those transplant teams in making the most optimal decision?
Yeah, well, I certainly think that we could do better clinically in terms of the selection of a donor. I think that, you know, the medicine in general is a world of complexity, right? And is constantly evolving. And in a way, that's what, you know, certainly keeps me involved in it in terms of the interest level. But at the same time, to be able to, you know, fully digest at the level of detail in terms of HLA typing, and it becomes a challenge, particularly with regards to new technologies, new studies that are evolving. So there is a risk of not necessarily being able to kind of keep up with the literature in a way, but also with regards to not fully appreciating the ever-evolving, constantly changing nature of the science. And that's where having these online tools available, but also just picking up the phone and being able to speak with someone at the NMDP really becomes a beneficial service for the community that we're able to provide, and clearly that we should provide, being the nation's registry for that. So I think that's the biggest thing. I think, you know, we certainly cannot know everything as a physician, and we have to know what we know and what we don't know. And in this case, the ability to have tools and resources available in order to optimize donor selection is definitely a blessing to have.
No, that's a great point. So taking a look forward to sort of round out this discussion, what are some of the things that you're both most excited about for the future of the field and kind of continuing to push this the next step and continuing to close those gaps in equity and access to care?
Yeah, I'll start first. So we alluded to that, and that is the ability to really to provide a donor for all now. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, we weren't able to, you know, necessarily say that. And now really to be able to say, hey, you have a medical need, a disease that requires a transplant, and, you know, in 2022, don't worry about the donor, really. I mean, in a sense of HLA being a barrier, that's really game changing, quite frankly. And with regards to that, then it allows patients to have a chance, right? I mean, in the medical field, you know, we as physicians are so fortunate to be able to, you know, take care of patients really at the most critical time in their lives. But if you were to ask a patient, you know, what he or she looks for in the kind of disarray and tough times that they're going for, it's a four-letter word called hope. And that hope is the ability to provide right now that donor for them, so they at least have a chance, right? At least they have the chance to step into the batter's box and take a swing, right? At least they have a chance to say, you know, I understand all the positive and negative effects of transplant, but at least have a donor to do it. At least they have a chance to kind of look for the future as being a participant in that future versus, you know, you have an illness that unless you, you know, if you don't have a donor, there's no way for you to have the best outcome. So it's that hope. It's that hope of being able to have that chance. And really as a physician, I, you know, that's what you want. You want to be able to give the best opportunity and provide that hope to patients. So that's, I think, the biggest, you know, benefit of alternative donor transplant. I think the other part of your question was access. And again, I feel pretty strongly about this. We, the NMDP, along with the American Society of Transplant and Cell Therapy, ASTCT, have a combined access initiative that's addressing across the ecosystem ways to enhance access and improve patient outcomes in ethnically diverse patients. And that's been a great, you know, a great opportunity to be able to kind of co-lead that with Dr. Stella Davies from Cincinnati Children's Medical Center. Dr. Davies is really phenomenal. ASTC is a great organization. You know, NMDP is equally great. I think we have the benefit of being a provider organization in terms of ASTCT coming together with a patient organization, NMDP, to really kind of systematically address these entrenched challenges in our healthcare system. So we have three committees addressing things like awareness, racial inequity, and poverty. And that's what it's going to take, really, Sam, is the ecosystem along with patients themselves and industry and academics and nonprofit organizations in order to really kind of tackle these entrenched problems of access. You know, I did mention earlier that, you know, we have patient services here at the NMDP that clearly, you know, I know that Steve was singing the praises of Craig's group. I sing the praises of a patient services group equally as loud. These are folks that are really dedicated folks in terms of helping other people navigate the system of complex healthcare, learn about clinical trials, and then also provide education materials and education for patients, as well as patient contacts themselves. So, you know, that having that ability as an organization to provide that is really, I think, outstanding and truthfully beneficial for patients as well.
Wonderful. Anything to add, Steve, as sort of like final takeaway messages from all this?
Well, I think we've really hit on the final. Well, one of the final takeaways being that really we're in an era where there is a donor for all for all patients in need, which is fantastic. And what we're starting to see is improvements across all types of transplants that are being performed. And so whether that's in a donor selection standpoint or the way that the procedure is being performed, we're seeing less morbidity, less mortality post allogeneic transplant than we've seen in the last decade. And it continues to improve year over year, which is fantastic. For me, what I'm really excited about is I spent the earlier part of my career trying to determine how you optimally match. And the more we optimally match, like with precision to match, like 8 of 8, 10 of 10, 12 of 12, or whatever, it diminishes the number of patients that are able to actually acquire that donor. And laying out that is the optimal match is something that I think we need to move away from. The optimal match is the donor that's available for you at the time of need. And so there are new and optimizing these strategies now to minimize the toxicity of the types of the donors that are being used is really critical. And we're seeing incredible gains year over year in this space. And so I'm excited for the next phase of studies where we start to look at really understanding the best HLA to match or mismatch in those various settings. It's going to take some time to figure all of this out. We've got some insights from haploidentical experience, but now that we could start to do some maybe minimal mismatching is the way I like to think of it. So we go from a haplo at a 4 of 8, let's just say 4 of 8, and then you'd have unrelated donors where you could go from a 5 of 8 or a 6 of 8 or a 7 of 8 and select for specific types of mismatches. There may be ways to optimize there as well, and getting up to an 8 of 8 level, which is fantastic. And one thing that I wasn't able to include in the article because the data wasn't available yet was the findings from a recent BMT-CTN study. So the Blood and Marrow Transplant Clinical Trials Network just completed the 1703 study, which was looking at use of post-transplant cyclophosphamide-based GVHD prophylaxis versus the standard of care, which was tacrolimus and methotrexate for for about 20 years. And that data will be presented at ASH. It was accepted as a late breaking abstract. It will be in the oral abstract session for late breaking, and presented by Dr. Shernan Holton from the University of Minnesota. And what that showed, looking at a composite endpoint of graft GVHD relapse-free survival, so considering acute grade 3 to 4 and then chronic GVHD requiring immunosuppression or relapse free survival was substantially better, significantly better in the post-transplant Cy group when we were considering matched sibling donors, matched unrelated donors, and a small portion of 7 of 8 matched unrelated donors. The original measure of success was a 15% improvement in Griffiths by 1 year, and it was closer to 18% difference. Mm-hmm. So very encouraging results there. And so expect that to become the standard of care. So we'd expect to see in the next few years improvements across the board in event-free survival for patients that are receiving allogeneic transplant on those new strategies. And so seeing that improvement and then also seeing the improvements that we've been able to gain in the mismatch setting will just continue to lead to better outcomes for all patients in need, which is fantastic to see. And now it's a matter of just optimizing that. And can we make it better? Can we continue to build on this platform that's really showing a lot of promise, and just improve that even more? So we'll see where this goes in the next decade or so. It'll be exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. No, it's wonderful. Well, this has been a really, I think, both informative and encouraging conversation. So I really appreciate you both taking the time to speak with me today.
Great. Thanks, Sam, for having us.
Yeah. Thanks, Sam. My pleasure.
Thanks again for listening. For more information and access to research and resources referenced in this episode, click the link in the episode description. Until next time on Explore Cell Therapy.